Hey, welcome to the podcast. I'm Ricardo.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Adam Scott.
Brandon's got, you got really like an NPR voice today.
Yeah, thank you.
Today we're talking about mind game movies? Mindfuck?
That was mindfuck movies.
Yeah.
Either way. Mind games, mindfucks, puzzlers.
The ones that get you scratching your noggin, right?
Videodrome. Demolition Man.
Whoa, slow down. Those could be on our fucking list, dude.
No, those are those are movies where people like fuck in their minds.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. No. These mess with your mind, but they don't, there's no one's having sex in my mind.
There's no direct, okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
No one's having sex with my cranium, you know? Yeah, so there's a lot of good. I don't know why Jenny didn't want to do this one. She's like, I'll go in and sit in, but I don't know. I don't know if I have five. But I'm like, you definitely have more than five. She said she might have mentioned the other ones in other podcasts, so she didn't want to double down. But whatever. I'm ready. Do you guys want to talk about some new movies we've seen, or what do you want to do?
I've just seen things that are new to me, not except Captain America.
Well, let's talk about Captain America. So if you haven't seen it, we're spoiler-free, guys. We're going, so you don't have to worry about it. We did kind of have a little review in a previous episode, but let's talk about it. I haven't talked about it with you. I really loved it.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I'm just... It's... They just keep getting better. Like, the balance of everything in the movie keeps getting better. Like, the action is really good, and it's funny.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
There's a lot of pathos in it, and the story is really good. Everyone's performance is really good.
They are. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about Thor 2 now.
Really? I loved Thor 2.
It was fun, but I'm like, man, like, did we really need that movie?
Yeah, it was fun.
I guess so.
And the stuff, like the action scene at the end.
Yeah.
Where they're like going through the portals and everything.
Yeah.
Like, it was really inventive. It was cool. And it was just balls to the wall nerdy.
Yeah.
Like alien gods firing laser guns. In an intergalactic war, like it's just nuts.
Yeah, yeah. You think they're gonna do Doctor Strange?
Yeah.
You think they're gonna mess with the magic and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he said as much, Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's what they were kind of trying to do with Thor, is set up kind of how magic works, but Doctor Strange is straight up magic.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's even, I don't think it's a spoiler to say his name is dropped. In Captain America.
Yeah, yeah.
Stephen Strange.
Yeah.
But I know he's one of his favorites, Kevin Feige's.
Really?
Yeah, favorite comics.
No way.
And since the beginning, he's wanted to do a Doctor Strange movie.
Oh, I wonder who's going to be in charge of that.
I don't know.
And it's going to be behind, because once they get the first one going, they'll be already in phase three, so.
Yeah, it would be a phase three thing.
Yeah. So, I guess so is.
With hopefully like Black Panther maybe.
Is
Miss Marvel?
So is Ant-Man going to be Phase 3 or Phase 2?
Ant-Man's Phase 3, because okay. Ant-Man will come out after the Avengers.
Avengers comes out next year?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I really dug Captain America: The Winter Soldier. I also, I don't own the Avengers Blu-ray, and I wonder if there's any like, I don't know if you guys own it, but. I wonder if there's any like cut scenes, because I know originally it was written, Avengers was written in the Captain America point of view, meaning it was his story. You're going through the movie as like looking at it through his character. But then I think once they got into editing, it kind of changed. So I wonder if those scenes were all filmed and such. Because then this technically could be the third Captain America movie, because Avengers would have been kind of the second one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a continue. I mean, I don't know
how
much of that is true, I guess, or,
yeah.
You know, how much of the original movie would have been from Captain America's. It already kind of is from Captain America's point of view.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I guess so. But I dug this one. I dug all the actors that played, you know, supporting parts, leading parts.
Robert Redford's amazing.
He's really good, man.
Scarlett Johansson's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Anthony Mackie.
Yeah.
I really want to talk about specifics. Can you talk about specifics?
No,
I
can't.
Damn it.
No. We'll have a spoiler cast. How about that?
All right. Oh, you already did one.
No, we did a review kind of, but with no spoilers. But we'll do a full-on spoiler.
Okay.
Spoiler cast.
We just talk through the movie point by point.
Yeah. And
then things what we loved. This happened.
And then what we loved. But all right, anything else that you saw in theaters? I saw Nonstop.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I went to my local $3 theater, my second run, and I went to see Liam Neeson's.
That's a real crowd pleaser at a $3 theater.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you. Everyone was excited to see Liam Neeson's kicking ass on the plane.
Was it good? I heard it was pretty good.
It was fun. It was pretty predictable and, you know, what you expect from that. But it was fun. It was, you know, it was cool to see a couple of character actors that I really enjoy. The dude who played Hemingway in the Woody Allen Paris
Corey
movie?
Corey Stoll.
Yeah, he was in it. He was really good.
He is really good. He was awesome in House of Cards.
I haven't seen the show.
So. Yeah, season one, he's probably the best part about it.
He's in it. Of course, Julianne Moore. I think one of the girls from Doctor Who is in it, I think.
Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey, yeah. What's her name?
No, I can't remember her real name.
What's her character's name?
Lady Mary.
She's really good looking.
She's very good looking.
Yeah. And then the girl from 12 Years a Slave is in it. Lupita Nyong'o.
Nyong'o, yeah.
She's in it. But it was fun. I mean, it's definitely, I'd say, a Netflix streaming movie. You definitely could just catch it when it's free. Anything else you saw?
I saw Catching Fire, but I'm sure you guys talked about Catching Fire enough.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a really cool movie, right?
It was really good.
Yeah.
It was way better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Really dark.
Yeah, yeah. I dig... it makes me sad. I dig what's his name's character, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman. Yeah, it was a bummer when he showed up.
Yeah,
he's so good.
Yeah, yeah. That just shows you how good he is. Like, and such a small part like that, someone else could have just like phoned it in. Another big actor could have phoned it in. But with just the limited amount of scenes he has, he did a fucking lot with those scenes.
Just his presence there.
He just fills out the role really well. Yeah. So that's. I can't wait to see how. Like, I can't wait to see more of him in the sequel. I know he filmed some scenes. And to see how they kind of deal with not having him completed his part and stuff. So. All right. You guys want to get into it? Anything else you saw? Adam?
I did not see anything new.
Okay.
So there's that.
There's that.
It was a slow weekend.
Yeah. All right. We'll get into it. So we're playing. We're playing. We're talking about Mind Game films, right? Who wants to go first? Whose idea was this? Adam, was your idea? You're going to go first.
Okay. Let me get settled. Where did my list go? It was here a second
vamping.
Ago. Yeah.
Vamping.
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 I can't find my list. It was here a second ago.
All right, we'll save Siblings. My number five.
Go for it.
All right, we'll start with Brandon.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I don't know why I didn't put it in this list. Definitely. Did you see it in theaters or DVD?
Oh, yeah. No, I saw it in theaters.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Such a good movie. Written by Charlie Kaufman.
This was going to be tied with being John Malkovich.
Yeah.
On the list.
Well, we'll talk about it right now. It's my number five.
Okay.
So we're going the other way.
We'll talk Charlie Kaufman.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we'll talk Charlie Kaufman. I'll say it now. It was a little closer to the front of the list, but I'm going to put it here so we can just talk about it. So we can have a Charlie Kaufman dialogue. So yours was directed by Michel Gondry,
mm-hmm.
and mine was directed by Spike Jonze.
Mm-hmm.
Both written by, again, Charlie Kaufman.
Charlie Kaufman.
They're fucking amazing movies.
They're really good.
Yeah, well, let's talk about yours first. What's the synopsis, basically?
I can't remember any characters' names, but
Jim, in Eternal Sunshine,
yeah, Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet,
Clementine?
Yeah. Joel and Clementine,
yeah.
Meet on a train and get into a relationship. But when they get into a fight, and I can't remember like if they do break up or if it was just because they got into a bad fight.
I mean, I don't even know which angle you're coming at this from.
I know. Like, chronologically, I'm coming. I guess I'm not coming chronologically.
If you're going chronologically with the movie, like it kind of cuts back and forth.
Yeah.
and
but it anyway, seems... it's about a world where a company is able to erase memories, and it just plays with that idea set to a love story between Joel and Clementine.
And it's got a good soundtrack. It's kind of everybody at the top of their game. It's got Mark Ruffalo in it, and
yeah, some Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood, Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
They're all really good. And I like that B storyline. That one's, it's really good. I enjoy it.
But just the way it plays around with the idea of like breakup.
Yeah.
You know, from someone and wanting to just forget about them completely.
Yeah.
You know, and just taking that to its literal extent. Like it's so heartbreaking.
Yeah, it is. Kate Winslet, this is something completely different than I've seen her do before this. Well, when I first saw this.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen her do anything like this before. She was playing kind of, how would you describe her character? Was she kind of like hippie-ish, kind of?
Yeah, I feel like if this came out today, I would kind of hate it. Because it would be yet another movie where the straight-laced kind of milquetoast guy meets the crazy, spunky.
Well, I feel like she's... The character is a play on the Manic Pixie Dream Girl.
Yeah.
But, like, it's playing opposite of type, like, where she starts off by saying, like, it's a self-aware Manic Pixie Dream Girl where she says, I'm not going to change it. Like, I'm not here to, like, fix you or make you better.
That's true.
Which is part of why I like that character so much.
Yeah, that's true.
Because she is that, like, I mean, I know I put off this vibe, but I'm not gonna fix you.
Because
I'm fucked up and I'm not gonna
help. It's kind of like a weird, like self-aware awareness, like about the character.
It's like if you acknowledge it up front, you can continue with it and just be like, we know what we're doing.
Yeah.
Just stick around. Where do you get a load of this?
Yeah, and she's actually playing that kind of person as opposed to like that kind of person who knows that they're that, like Natalie Portman in Garden State or something like
right.
that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. She's not as generic as Natalie Portman's character in Garden State. And then Jim Carrey plays it so...
Yeah.
So tragic and sad.
Yeah, I miss this Jim Carrey.
Yeah, like, this is when he was taking chances. You know what? I'll admit, The Number 23 was a bad movie, but at least he's taking chances. Do you know what I mean? Like, now he's just doing Mr. Popper's Penguins, and
even if that chance is Joel Schumacher sent him down and was like, okay, I think I got it this time. I've made a few of these.
Yeah.
I think I looked him over. I think I got it. I promise, Jim.
And then no, nothing.
No.
But at least he was taking chances. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Jim Carrey was like, Phone Booth was pretty good.
Yeah.
It wasn't terrible.
Yeah. Colin Farrell was awesome in it.
Yeah, he was good. One location, interesting idea.
Yeah.
Maybe this guy's got it again.
But, and then Eternal Sunshine playing with, like, all the in-camera, like, techniques and stuff that Michelle Gondry's, like, really good at. It's just it's just so well done. So many things that you think are visual effects aren't. They're just practical effects. Yeah.
It just, and it feels like a full, like, what he's so good at, that, like, full execution of an idea.
Yeah.
Like, just taking that question of, like, well, what if you can erase someone's memories? But then, like, the person who does the erasing, like, they have access to your memories. So what would that person do with access to them?
Mm-hmm. And also, what do you think of them separately doing their own things? Like, how do you feel about Michelle Gondry going and doing like The Science of Sleep and Be Kind Rewind, where he's not collaborating with another person? It's just like Michelle Gondry directing a Michelle Gondry script.
I love how like balls to the wall Michelle Gondry he is.
Yeah.
But sometimes it just doesn't have any kind of form to it.
He's not as good a writer as he is a director.
Yeah.
Like, he's got a visual style, and he's good at visual storytelling. He's just not good at storytelling.
Right, he needs the story to put the visuals on.
Yeah.
Well, then
but I did really like The Science of Sleep.
It was okay.
That's the only caveat to that, is I did enjoy that a lot.
Did you enjoy Be Kind Rewind?
No.
Did you enjoy Green Hornet?
I didn't see Green Hornet.
Oh, good for you. Now, what do you think of Charlie Kaufman directing Charlie Kaufman?
I think that'll be great.
Wait, you haven't seen Synecdoche, New York?
No, I haven't seen Schenectady.
It's not Schenectady.
Or Synecdoche, sorry.
However you say it.
Synecdoche.
Sure. It's...
Schenectady, New York?
It's not Schenectady.
It's Synecdoche.
Synecdoche. Who cares? It's a really long movie.
It's a really long, really depressing, not as good as anything he's... someone else has directed that he wrote movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But Philip Seymour Hoffman's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it's got a great, like, oh, like, the stuff with Philip Seymour Hoffman and Tom Noonan, where Tom Noonan is playing Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah. That stuff's really good.
Or, like, it's got really great moments. It's just, it's so slow.
Yeah, yeah. And not in a good way.
Not in a good way. Not in a fun, still Terrence Malick-y way.
It's not still. It's slow.
Yeah.
No one's fun like Terrence Malick.
No one's fun like Terrence Malick.
It's true, guys.
Like, and it does. It's like, I feel like there's so much humor in it that a better director would have been able to do more with. Like, it felt like he kind of buried his own humor.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Like, somebody else would have played up that more. If Spike Jonze had directed this, it would have been probably shorter.
Much shorter.
A little faster pace. Really funny, probably.
Great soundtrack.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely had some Karen O, probably.
I don't know. I need to rewatch it. Because it does have a lot of great moments. Like, everything I'm thinking of, I do remember really enjoying. I feel like I need to rewatch it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to rewatch it after Philip Seymour Hoffman.
And both
passed.
The...
I thought you hadn't seen it.
No, I know. I haven't seen it. Okay. That's why I said that's what made me want to revisit it. And revisit it, I guess, for the first time.
And it's funny because both...
Are you playing a mind game with me right now? Yeah.
Both these movies that we're talking about are mind game movies as well. The Signs of Sleep.
Yeah.
So however you say it,
Synecdoche.
S-Y-N-D-O-C-H-E.
No.
Yeah.
No. Synecdoche. It's like
S-Y-N-E.
I think it's O-E. C-H.
If we only had these machines to just type it in and then it would come up. If only someone invented that. Like something like portable.
S-Y-N-E-C-H. Or C-D. There's a D there?
Synecdoche. Yeah.
Synecdoche, New York, whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's a mindfuck as well.
Just saying the title.
Yeah. That's a...
I mean, like, adaptation, kind of, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, it is.
But not in the way that, like, the characters are being
fucked
in the minds.
No.
But it's just, it's... You know, we don't know where things are going at certain points.
Yeah, yeah. So, we'll go this way, then, and talk about... being John Malkovich.
Malkovich.
If you haven't seen it, basically, I'll give you the easy plot line. Craig is a puppeteer. Craig is played by John Cusack. And he goes to work at the, what is it, 11th? What floor is it that he works at?
The 11th and a half.
11
right?
and a half.
Or and, 7 and a half.
7 and a half. One of those.
Yeah.
And he finds that there's this little, like, there's a little hole in the wall, right? Quite literally, right? Of the office he works at. And that little hole leads... It's basically a portal into John Malkovich's head. The actor, John Malkovich. The celebrity, John Malkovich. It's a portal to his head where he could control him too, right? From what I remember.
Yeah,
he learns to
control
him, yeah.
Like, he learns to control him, the whole puppet master thing.
Yeah.
And it's only for like, a few minutes... And then he comes out like...
It spits you out off of the New Jersey
turnpike. Yeah. And you have... You're like... He's always like wet when he comes out, isn't he? Like...
Oh, yes, yeah. Everyone.
Everyone is.
Yeah. Because it's like a mud... It's like a mud hole. Like, it's one of the things where like you go in and then you just start sliding down into John Malkovich's head.
Yeah. Which is so weird unto itself.
It's just so bananas and amazing.
Yeah. And... It stars Cameron Diaz, Catherine Keener, who's amazing.
She's so good in this.
I love her and everything. John Malkovich, of course.
Charlie Sheen.
As himself.
And Sean John Penn, Malkovich's Sean friend, Penn. Charlie.
Yeah. It's... I don't want to say a lot. I mean, I just love this movie because of how weird it is. I remember looking at it when I first saw it. I didn't see it in theaters. I saw the DVD or the whatever, the VHS box, and remember thinking, oh, that looks like an interesting documentary. I wonder if it's like
it's about the Steppenwolf Theater.
Yeah, or it's like it's something like being John Henry, or you know, like like something like Al Pacino would do.
The
know?
Oral history of John Malkovich. Yeah. Yeah,
and I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I like John Malkovich. I'm gonna pick this up, and taking it home and not expecting what I got, and it definitely blew my mind away. Just the fact that, like, he has to like pry open the elevator to get to his.
Oh yeah,
his,
got, like they've got to hold it open.
Yeah, yeah, and he's got to like jump into the floor of his work office, and yeah, it's just so weird. But directed by Spike Jonze, really well done. The humor definitely played up a little more. Like that's his thing. By the way, I love Spike Jonze as an actor. I can't get enough of him. He was great in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Three Kings,
he's amazing. He's like, you guys want to go back to your day jobs? And you see Mark Wahlberg like at a check stand, like he's a cashier. Ice Cube, he's like selling like stereos or something. And then you see Spike Jonze's character and his day job. He's like just shooting like stuffed animals off of like a car on blocks.
I don't really got much of a day job.
He's great in Jackass.
I don't know why my Spike Jonze sounds like Aziz Ansari, but that's how it sounds. Yeah.
But yeah, being John Malkovich, such a great movie. Such, I mean, really, that's all you need. A puppeteer finds a portal into John Malkovich's head.
Hijinks ensue.
And so smart too, in a way. Like the movie is like really smart, you know.
Yeah.
Really well done, and it could have been one of those movies where you're like, the fuck, this is such a weird movie. Like, no, like this is stupid. We're not going to make this, but it just. Has such humor and like
an interesting message. To have been in the room when they pitched this movie to like execs.
I mean, that's one of the things I love most. Like, Big Trouble in Little China is always my go-to movie for like the weirdest fucking thing that was ever supported by a major studio.
Yeah,
but like this is right up there with no one understood this.
Yeah,
like no one who made decisions probably really understood what was going on,
and it probably went like undetected. Like, what? Why are we funding? Is this a documentary we're funding?
Did Spike Jonze do a feature before?
No, he being just, John Malkovich? He just music
this
videos.
This is the first feature,
just music
right?
videos, yeah.
And Jackass and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And stuff for Vice. I think he had already been working for Vice.
Yeah.
But I think he had clout as a director, and I think also Charlie Kaufman had a little like clout as a writer. He had rewritten a couple of things. He had some original pieces. And this kind of world, I think they
he'd been writing for TV too, right?
Yeah, yeah. And Stacy, I think, is one of them and stuff. I went to Q&A with him once, and he said he had written there's a spec script, a Simpson spec script he wrote. He's it's on the internet if you look for it. He's like, but and people are like, oh, just describe what's about, and he's like, no, just go read it. It's like just imagine what. What is Simpson's spec script?
Hey, I bet they'll get to it eventually. They eventually did Judd Apatow's script.
Oh, really?
That he did back when he was a kid, yeah.
Oh, wow. And it's already made, or is it going to
air? I think so. They did it, I think, for this last season, so it may have already aired.
Oh, okay. All right. So, really good movie, and that's my number five. Adam, what is your number five?
My number five is from 1991, and I don't think I had it on any other list. I just want to double check. No, I did not. Naked Lunch.
Okay, yeah. I expected that to be in your list. I thought you had put it in another a list before.
I thought so too. I might have just forgotten which one it is, but yeah. Was it in my drugs list? It might have been. Maybe.
But tell us what Naked Lunch is
about. Naked Lunch. Okay, well that could be a whole hour onto it, so trying to explain Naked Lunch. Even the book is one of those things where I need to go back and revisit. And the movie, okay, so it's, you've got Cronenberg doing an adaptation of William S. Burroughs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's really, I think, all you need to know to understand how much of a mindfuck this movie is. And it's not just a straight adaptation of Naked Lunch, it's like a biographical adaptation, so it's the story of Naked Lunch mixed with autobiographical information about William S. Burroughs and this weird sort of Mobius strip where they're feeding each other and they end up in the interzone and the typewriters come alive and want you to rub the drugs on their lips. And yes, typewriters are bugs that have lips. It's such a weird, bizarre, crazy mindfuck of a movie. It's got mugwumps and... I don't even know where to begin. And like, Peter Weller plays the William Burroughs character. And you can't tell if he is a writer who is moonlighting as a exterminator or if he finds a, and he's just way into drugs, or if he actually finds a portal into another world where they have monsters that feed people and typewriters turn into giant insects. It's such a weird, crazy fucking head trip of a movie.
And it's directed by
David Cronenberg.
David Cronenberg. Wrong crazy dude. David Cronenberg he directed
The Fly. So
it's
very visceral.
Yeah.
Very, very unsettlingly visceral.
Who wrote it again?
The movie or the script?
Yeah, the movie.
The movie, I want to say, was Cronenberg.
Is adapted by Cronenberg?
Yeah, he adapted William Burroughs' novel.
Cronenberg's so crazy.
He is so crazy. And I think he is the most fitting person to adapt Naked Lunch.
Yeah.
Because Naked Lunch, like if you read Naked Lunch, it is a weird sort of treatise, or however the fuck you say that word, on like heroin addiction. Like it's a lot about heroin.
Yeah.
But then this movie becomes like this crazy sci-fi trip into another dimension where there's monsters and insect typewriters that want you to do drugs with them.
Yeah.
And Roy Scheider.
I said Paul Verhoeven because I was thinking of RoboCop for some reason.
Peter Weller.
Yeah.
And it's got a great cast besides. It's Peter Weller, Judy Davis, Ian Holm, Julian Sands, Roy Scheider. I mean, if you don't know a lot about William S. Burroughs, he was kind of part of the Beat Generation. And so, like, his friends, Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg, will randomly find him on the side of the street, like, all strong. Like, oh, hey, you have to go back to the Interzone and bring more stories like this back. It's such a crazy movie. It's on Criterion. Such a head trip.
It is.
I don't think I will ever truly understand either the book or the movie, no matter how many times I watch or read it.
Yeah. I've only seen this once because it's so trippy. I don't like how it makes me feel. You know? Like it feels like I just ate a bunch of mushrooms and I had a bad trip, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
I think a lot of the movies that I have on this list, in their mind fuckery, they're very cyclical. Because I remember, like, this movie starts and ends with something that really happened to William Burroughs, where he and his wife play the quote-unquote William Tell game, and he shoots her in the head. That really happened to him. Like, he actually shot his wife in the head in Mexico. And so that's how the movie... spoiler alert. if you didn't already know that about William Burroughs, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. But yeah, it's just a weird... I'm like, that's... Oh, and we're done.
Yeah.
It's such a weird, weird, amazingly weird movie.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's to you, Brendan, number four.
Yep, number four.
Yeah.
1968's 2001 by Stanley Kubrick.
I concur.
All those numbers trip me up. I was like, 1968,
2001. 2001, 1968 by 0479.
Yeah.
What was the production number for that one?
UV7843.
Oh, okay.
I guess it was MGM. Anyway, this is not funny. I've seen this a lot, and I've seen it in theaters a lot.
Yeah.
And this actually reminded me, we did actually see something. We saw A Clockwork Orange at the Alex Theater.
Which was amazing.
In Glendale, California?
Right. In Glendale, California, with a Q&A by Gary Oldman and Malcolm McDowell, where they pretty much exclusively talked about tits.
Really?
Yeah. It was a very randy Q&A. Malcolm McDowell was talking about how Stanley Kubrick cast the topless girls in the movie, and how he directed the orgy scene.
Specifically prefaced by Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman, like, set up, it's like, why don't you tell me the story about the grapes?
Yeah. It was like, Shakespeare
and grapes.
Yeah.
So, what was the story? I want to hear the story about the casting of the topless girls.
I don't remember the part about the cat. The punchline is just that Kubrick, like, laid out, like, pictures of tits that they had taken from the casting scene. And he was like, Malcolm McDowell, you know, gets to choose one. And then he chose two. And then Stanley Kubrick chose three because he's the director. And then he looked on the back and he hadn't written any of the girls' names down.
Oh, great.
They just called him in and taken pictures of their tits.
Great. So how did they...
I keep saying tits because he kept saying tits.
Okay.
It was really adorable.
Now, how...
And also Stanley Kubrick was into the brunette in the orgy scene.
Really?
Yeah. So he
to the William Tell Overture, bring it back around.
Yeah, to the William Tell Overture. So every time, like, he was going to do something with brunette, like, Stan was like, okay, that's enough. it's enough, Malcolm. Really? Move on to the next. Yeah, because I mean, and I never thought about it. Like, it takes half an hour to film that thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's all time lapse.
Yeah.
But I bring that up here because watching Clockwork Orange in a really weird...
That's a mindfuck movie, too.
It is, but the theater we saw it in was not a theater you should be watching a movie in. Because we were in the upper tier balcony. So you're, like, looking down.
Yeah.
At like 180 degree angle, like at the screen.
It's not like the Egyptian where it's like the balcony is really low, so you're right at level.
Because yeah, it's not a movie theater. It's not
at eye level. It's, yeah, it's a theater theater. Yeah.
Like it's meant for the theater stage, yeah, not yeah the back of the stage.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it didn't look terrible.
No, it didn't. But that's watching that like in that weird circumstance with an audience that was really weird. it just made me realize I don't think I have more like fun or interest in a movie than watching a Stanley Kubrick movie on like in a movie theater. Like, I don't know. There's just something about it, the way, and you'll be with me on the stillness. Like there's something about his pacing that being in a dark theater with a great sound system, like it just lulls you into a rhythm.
Well, and his visuals, like seeing the framing on that, on the big screen for the first time. It's pretty perfect.
Hmm. And that's, and like 2001 is the epitome of like a pacing and just the way he uses, you know,
it's almost hypnotic
popular music,
yeah,
like really to cut against, like it's just, I can watch 2001 100 times. I know why someone would not want to watch it and find it extremely boring,
yeah,
but I'll watch it on the big screen at any time and I'll be just as engaged as the first time I saw it. And I only say that because I haven't read the book and I still really can't wrap my head around the ending of 2001, like at all. I can think about it a lot, but I still really don't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, I love the idea of like evolution as the movie goes on with the monoliths. Do we have to give a synopsis of 2001?
No, I don't think so.
No, do it.
Do it.
Like, because the placement of each monolith kind of marks like a level of advancement in human evolution. Mm. And, you know, then it comes down to like man versus machine, the computer versus the human, and the computer seeing the human as, you know, fallible and, you know, should get rid of him. It'll just impede, you know, the computer's next step.
Yeah.
But it, and all that is amazing. And the stuff between David and Hal is kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
Like that whole sequence is kind of an amazing horror movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then when it gets to Jupiter and Beyond the Infinite, like, it's amazing, but, like, showing up in the Louis the 16th, like, bedroom with the white walls, seeing his older self, and then it cuts to, like, him looking back at him, and then he's eating at the table.
And then he's a baby.
And then he's a giant galactic
star child,
being reborn. But it, I don't know, it's just amazing to me. And it's, I feel like it was way ahead of its time in its depiction of this kind of, like, metaphysical idea of what an alien culture would be like,
mm-hmm,
where you really don't understand anything that they're doing because they're so far advanced.
Yeah.
So it's just bonkers, which I guess if that's the ultimate message at the end, I know it's probably more involved than that and I'm just not smart enough to know, but if that's it, then it's super successful.
No, I feel like I want to see a note card in Stanley Kubrick's handwriting. Shit's bonkers.
Shit's bonkers. Should we play loudly? Because this shit's bonkers.
Shit is bonkers.
I haven't seen this movie in theaters. I've only seen it on DVD. And
we're going. The next time, like the Egyptian and the Arrow plays it all the time. Yeah. The next time they're doing it, we're going to go.
Because
it's amazing.
I've seen Clockwork Orange.
I just hope there's not a guy stoned out of his mind on LSD like there was last time.
No. That's right. I remember you telling me about that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another Stanley Kubrick movie on the list I'll get to.
Okay.
When it comes to my number four.
It's your turn right now.
All right.
Hey, my ears are all open.
Is
that a good segue?
Eyes Wide Shut. Yeah. I remember seeing this movie. This movie came out in 1999. I was out of high school. Graduated a little early from high school. I was 17. And I remember, I think I just turned 17 because they barely let me in. Because this movie's NC-17 when it was released here.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking, everyone I know that went in there was really, like, affected by, like, the graphic, like, sex scenes and, like, how... But for me, it was all about, like, Tom Cruise's like journey into like this like madness that is coming up around him and all the characters he fucking meets and just like even like the music that little like piano like score is fucking creepy. It's really creepy, and like the mansion it doesn't make you feel good. You know what I mean? Like
people in inexpressive masks or singularly expressive, like with only one expression and the black eyes.
Yeah.
Very unsettling. And the piano player who's blindfold. Like it's a crazy, trippy, awesome mindfuck.
I remember so much the way he walks in the movie.
Yeah.
I feel
it's
like
very specific.
Yeah. I feel like that was something they probably spent for Tom Cruise's liking way too long figuring out.
I think also part of it might have been for Steadicam purposes, you know, because Tom Cruise has a speedy way of walking.
Yeah.
Do you know
what
I mean?
This is like, what do you think is the apex of Tom Cruise running in a movie? Because all he ever wants to do is run.
Yeah. Probably his best running was probably done in Ghost Protocol. He runs like half
when he runs away from weather?
Yeah.
Probably is it.
There's like a 30-minute sequence.
Yeah, just him running. Like straight ahead. Yeah, this is the antithesis of that, where he's just like
you are not allowed to run.
Yeah. Yeah.
At all.
Like Tom, he just got too quickly and it's like, "Oh, Tom, slow the fuck down."
Tom, we know you like to fucking run, but we need you to slow you down. The Citicam guy can't keep up with you. He's going to slow you down, bro.
For some reason I remember like his movements in the costume shop.
Yes.
With the Lily Sobieski stuff.
Yeah.
Like there's it's that pacing that he nails every time. There's just something about it that just lulls you into a rhythm, and he maintains it through the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I always go back and forth with Nicole Kidman. Here she's good. She's good, but I would have maybe liked to see it with a different actress that wasn't his wife. You know what I mean? At the time,
I think that made it interesting at the time.
You think
so? Yeah,
yeah. My favorite scenes, though, are the ones with Sidney Pollack.
Yeah.
Yes.
The one where she's, like, in the bathroom and he's getting dressed and stuff and Tom Cruise comes in.
Playing pool.
Yeah, yeah. And playing pool is such a great scene. You know, Woody Allen was supposed to play that character.
What?
And he didn't. I think it's in the DVD or the documentary of the making of. And he said he couldn't because the commitment was an open-ended contract, basically. Well, that's what Tom Cruise had. It's the only time in film history where someone signed an open-ended contract, meaning he was hired. Tom Cruise was hired to the movie, and by Stanley Kubrick, until Stanley Kubrick let him go. So he wasn't allowed to leave. You know, like he was.
That sounds like a movie in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, good thing too, because it took like 2 years to make. Right,
it took 2 years. And,
yeah.
And Tom Cruise, I think, in interviews, has talked about how it was even the waiting on that was a mind fuck. You know, like literally just being in London for 2 years filming day after day. And it wasn't like, oh, let's take a break and then we'll come back. No, it's like we're filming for 2 years and, you know, scenes over and over and over and then doing them again, reshooting. And Sidney Pollack agreed because it's funny. I saw him speak. He came to my like my theater school where I went to like theater where I learned how to direct theater and stuff. And he came to talk, and I remember him talking about this specifically and Woody Allen and saying how he liked acting because it was a way for him to spy on other directors and see how they worked. And he agreed to this because he wanted that experience to see how this genius worked. And he agreed to do it, and I think just those scenes, the two scenes he's in, I think took six to eight months, I think, for the Sidney Pollack. Just his scenes, two scenes.
Yeah,
it's not a lot of coverage.
They're like 15 minutes each. But
yeah.
I could not picture Woody Allen in that part. I think
Sidney Pollack
plays that part so perfectly.
Yeah,
and like his voice is so much a part of that character to me.
Yeah,
I could. Yeah.
It would have been interesting.
Woody Allen doesn't have the same gravitas.
No,
is that what you're saying?
He does not have the same gravitas.
Yeah. It just those two scenes really get me. And then the scene he has with the prostitute when he's at her house.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty. It's pretty interesting. This movie for me, it's more of like all these different feelings that he's going through with these different people when he meets Nightingale, his friend, and he gets the password. And then just the party itself. It's a trip, man. Like, I don't know what was released in theaters. Was it the unrated version, or did we have an NC-17 version? Because
I thought the one with the digitally inserted people was the one that was released in theaters here.
I think so, yeah. But they have...
I think it was R, because I saw it in the theater.
Okay.
And if it was NC-17, I don't think I could have... Well, 1999. Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to see it in the theater.
Because... I've seen the DVD that's the unrated version.
Right.
And it's pretty I think it's much a far better film because you do get to see certain things that you're like, fuck, dude, I can't see that.
So it's more of a mind fuck.
Yeah,
the movie,
yeah.
I still haven't seen the unrated version. I've still only seen the R.
You should see it.
And the R version is a pretty good mind fuck. A pretty thorough mind fuck.
Just the fact that like you're kind of going through each of these rooms when he's at the party.
Mm-hmm.
Through Tom Cruise's eyes, I mean his character's eyes, and like experiencing like what you're seeing is like, and then with the music and stuff, oh man, it's really fucked up. Not that, I mean, it's just an orgy that's happening, but just the fact that like it's a sketchy group of people. Do you mean like just all these ultra rich kind of people? I don't know. It just makes me feel uneasy.
Well, it's just it's always played with Tom Cruise like. A foot back from everyone.
Yeah.
Even when he's walking like through the people, it's like he's not, you're never at that party kind of, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
No, like you're always looking outside at it.
Yeah. And then even when he goes back to the house and he tries to get in, they give him a sign to stop looking into these affairs. Yeah. It's one of those movies where I like a movie when you see it and then you're like, oh, it was a good movie. It was okay. You know? And then you forget. I've learned to, like, when I see a movie, to kind of, I'll give you my initial feelings on it. Like, oh, that was really fun, dude. Like, Captain America, that was fun. And then the next day, how I wake up and feel about it, that's the way I end up feeling about it the rest of, you know, the life I have with that movie. And with this movie, it's one of those movies. I like it when I see a movie and it's like 3-4 days later and you're like, I can't get that movie out of my mind. You know, like whether it's good or bad, it's something very interesting, and I dig. I had that with a movie that Adam let me, Martyrs, where that movie had me thinking of things I never wanted to think about. You know, like it's like I don't need to think about death and existentialism together. You know what I mean, and it put those two things in my path, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And the same thing with this movie, where this was like a week later, and I was still thinking about this movie. Like, man. And then just as an artist, just like what was he thinking doing this thing like this and all this Steadicam shot, like fuck, that's brave that he did that, you know, in one take. And it's just a great movie. Even if you hate it, it's a great movie to, if you're a film student or whatever, to kind of just sit and watch, study as like how would you have directed this? That's incredible to see the choices that he made. But anyway, should I say the synopsis of what it is?
I think it's fine.
Yeah,
it's look Tom Cruise's journey into a dark sexual underworld.
Eyes Wide Shut. Nicole Kidman, Tom Cruise, Sydney Pollack, a really young Lily Sobieski. Mm-hmm. The guy who's in every movie, he's playing the crazy Russian guy or Middle Eastern guy. I forget his name. He's in like Snatch and Lock, Stock. And it's really well done, I thought, and it's just a really mindfuck of a movie. And just the score. If download the score and you're going to be... What's with your mic?
Your mic's farted. I'm just moving it.
I really enjoyed it, so if you get a chance, check it out. Eyes Wide Shut. It's Stanley Kubrick's last movie, right? Correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, there you go.
Man, how good would AI have been? I need to watch AI again.
I think... If AI would have been done by Kubrick, it would have been pretty much the same, but weirder, mindfuckier.
I think it was still really good.
Yeah, I just don't like the last 10 minutes that was.
Yeah, everything after he's frozen is.
If you end it there, it's a really good movie. Because
it's super tragic too.
Yeah. But Spielberg's like, we gotta make him happy.
Nope, gotta make it heartwarming.
Yeah, Adam, what is your number four?
My number four is from 1988, and it is The Vanishing.
What is this?
I've never seen this.
You've never seen The Vanishing?
I don't know if I've seen this.
Oh my gosh.
What is it?
Okay, so
did you mean to say The Langoliers?
No, I did not mean to say The Langoliers. The Vanishing, they remade it like 3 years later with Kiefer Sutherland and Sandra Bullock.
No.
And Jeff Bridges? No? Oh. You guys have to see The Vanishing. It's on Criterion. It is it's foreign, Dutch. It is a Dutch film. So this couple are like on a day trip and they end up getting in an argument and she gets out of the car or he gets out of, like, they separate and end up at a gas station and she goes missing. And the whole movie is about him trying to figure out what happened to his girlfriend.
This sounds really familiar.
Well, they remade it in 1993 with Kiefer Sutherland and Sandra Bullock.
But you're talking about the original.
I'm talking about the original.
Yeah.
With the ending of this movie. I can't believe you guys have not seen it. You need to see this movie for the ending. One of the best endings to a movie ever.
Really?
Such a mindfuck.
Better than The Mist?
On par.
Oh.
Like, wait a minute. Did you guys like The Mist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's one of the best endings in a long, long time.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is on par with The Mist.
Have you read the book? Have you read the short story?
I have read the short story.
You like this better? The movie better? Or the short story?
Are you talking about The Mist or The Vanishing?
The Mist, sorry. I mean,
I agree with Stephen King. He should have ended it like that. He should have ended the short story the way Frank Darabont ended the movie.
Okay.
The Vanishing, it's about this guy's obsession with figuring out what happened to his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And I really, like, I can't tell you anything more about it because it will ruin the movie. Like, you just have to watch this movie. This guy's trying to figure out what happened to his girlfriend. And it's amazing. It's really creepy. Such a mind fuck. Like, there's a supporting character. I can't believe you guys haven't seen this. Like, I want to talk about it so much, but I don't want to give anything away. Go see The Vanishing. It's a mind fuck. One of the best endings ever. Great scary movie. You'll really like it, Ricardo, because it's very still.
Ooh.
And then you can watch The Abomination that is the Americanized version, which completely cuts the balls off of the movie.
What year was the remake made?
I want to say 93.
Okay. So technically, it could be remade again.
It could be remade again. I was exactly right. 93. Yeah. Oof.
Can we put the balls back on?
Yeah,
put the balls back on. You can most definitely put the balls back on.
All right. I got to see it now.
You have to. It's Criterion. It's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Fuck,
but you have to, like, if you're having a problem with it, like, oh, I don't, like, I'm bored. Like, you know, you have to stick around till the end. You have to see the ending of the movie.
Just that much. That's so fucked up.
It's amazing. Okay. Such a good, very good.
All right. We'll move on. I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, like myself. now I have to put that in my queue. What is your number three?
Third on my list would be 1997, I'm guessing, or 8. Might even be a lot later than that. But David Fincher's The Game.
Shut the fuck up, dude.
Yep.
I'm going to show you my list. So you don't know I'm lying. Number three.
So number three.
The Game. The Game. It's from 1997.
I figured someone else would have it.
This is really creepy because we're kind of hitting all the
points. We both had
a
Kubrick for number four. Yeah. And number five, we both had a Kaufman.
Yeah,
I feel like we were almost cheated. Like
we didn't.
We didn't. But it's creepy that literally it's my number three. I was like looking at my notes again as you were saying.
Well, it's better than those other ones.
Yeah.
I don't think it's better than 2001, but it's, anyway, arbitrary list.
I'm not going to lie. It's my favorite Fincher movie.
Your favorite Fincher movie?
Yeah.
It is really good.
Yeah.
Favorite?
Only tied to, it's three-way tie, really. Fight Club.
Okay.
Fight Club this.
It's your favorite, but it's a tie.
Fight Club this and The Social Network.
Really?
Really? Yeah. That's your three?
Yeah. I've seen Social Network now officially more than I've seen Fight Club.
No Seven?
Seven's good, but I like how much I could rewatch these other movies.
See, me, it's, if there was a three-way tie, it'd be this, Seven, and Zodiac.
Yeah.
See, Zodiac is really good, too. I forgot about that. Totally forgot.
Zodiac
that.
Might be his best.
I think Zodiac is his best.
That's his godfather.
And it's so, like, underrated, I feel. Like, people don't give it enough credit.
Yeah. People who love it really love it.
Yeah, yeah. I totally forgot about that. Shit. Well, let's talk about The Game.
It's not, because I had seen Alien 3, but I do remember seeing this movie, and just, like, it creeped me the fuck out.
Yeah.
Me too.
That fucking clown thing.
Yeah. And the TV, the news guy.
This is an honorable mention, because I do love this movie. It is a mind fuck. It's so fucking good.
Yeah. It's now available on Criterion Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
It is a story of Nicholas Van Orton, not Horton, Van Orton. And basically the movie starts off and I'll try not to give too much.
You can just say he's, you know, a rich hedge fund manager.
Yeah, yeah.
He's kind of separated himself from everyone around him.
Yeah.
His brother.
Ultra rich.
Yeah, ultra rich. His brother, who he hasn't really seen in a while. His
played
brother,
by Sean Penn.
Played by Sean Penn, who's kind of a troublemaker, gives him for
Conrad.
Conrad. Tells him about this thing he did.
It's a gift he gives him.
It's a gift he gives him. But like he did it. He's telling him because someone either got it for him or he did it.
And it changed his life.
Yeah, and it's basically a company that will set up. It's a game, but it involves your whole life.
Yeah.
So you sign over
everything, really.
Everything in all of your life, you don't and then really the game
know.
Starts.
You don't really know until, yeah.
Right. Well, because he, like, it starts with his application being rejected.
Yeah.
But then, you know, shit gets real.
Yeah, his application gets rejected, and then that's part of the game. But anyway, just the fact that, like, they go and, like, he has to have, like, a doctor check him.
By
and,
James like, Reborn. Yeah. Rest in peace.
Yeah. Who's amazing.
Yeah.
This movie, the tone of it, I mean, Seven has a certain like look to it, but this is its own type of darkness that's different from Seven's. Would you agree? Like Seven has a very like specific like,
well, Seven's that
color,
that grittier.
Yeah.
Like the opening credits of Seven set the tone perfectly. Yeah. Whereas this is a much more polished darkness where it's like the refined. Like I just think about all of his suits and everything.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It's not as grimy.
Yeah.
It's not as grimy as Seven or Alien 3 or Zodiac even. I feel like it's a much more suave venture.
Yeah, because it's more from
Michael
Douglas's character.
Yeah.
As opposed to Seven, which is more about the tone of the killer.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. It's like it's a richer background where everything is a richer world where everything is like literally like monetarily richer, not like it's more dynamic or anything.
And basically, Conrad, Sean Penn's character, he says, and you find out that Sean Penn's character used to be a drug addict and stuff. And he basically says the game changed my life and stuff. And it will for you too. And the emotional journey he goes through, it's exhausting. Like, watching this movie, when I first watched it, I'm like, at the end of the movie, I was like, at the end, the last few scenes, you definitely, like, start breathing again. Because it's so tense, and, like, everywhere he ends up going, it's just, it's really well made.
It's so good. And this was one of those pay-per-view movies where, like, you buy the all-day pass, and so I would watch it, like, 7 times in a day or something, like some ridiculous number of times in a day.
Yeah.
And each time it was still just as gut-wrenching, like even, like I just had to keep watching it because like there's so much happening here. I have to watch it again and again and again.
Yeah. I saw this in theaters and I remember just being like blown away. Like just not understanding like how, and that's what Fincher's so good at. The people who love Fincher love him for that, I think. Like there's some people I think that don't get him, that they're like, he's all right. But I like how emotionally his movies make me feel. Like, even, like, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo made me feel fucking just not good, man. Just sick. Made me feel, like gross. And this one made me feel, like, panicked. Like, I was just panicking the whole movie. Like, damn, what is this? Where are we going? Spike Jonze makes a little cameo in this movie. He's one of the ambulance drivers.
Oh.
Yeah. So, you know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
Yeah. There's an ambulance. I'm trying to remember. They get transported in an ambulance at one point, and he's one of the drivers.
Oh, no, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, it's hard to talk about anything.
Oh, yeah.
Without giving away. Because then we can talk about the scene they're in, but then that's giving away, like, the whole movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny. This movie was also in my twist endings list. It just has a great ending.
Yeah, but it's not. I wouldn't, because I hate.
It's not even about that.
Because I hate twist endings. Yeah, yeah. But it's not. I mean, the whole movie is a twist. Like it's, like if there's a twist at the ending, it's just because it's yet another thing.
Yeah.
That you thought was one thing, it turns out to be something else.
Yeah, yeah. But all in all, great movie.
I want to watch it right now.
Yeah. Good thing I own it, so I get to watch it after this. written by. Do you guys have they done really anything else? Oh man, they went on to do Catwoman. That's not good.
Can't all be hits.
I mean, they went on to do Catwoman, Terminator 3, Terminator Salvation, The Surrogates.
That's, ooh.
They've had a rough... The Net 2.0.
They've had one good movie, is what we're saying.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to watch The Net 2.0 now. But, when was The Net 2.0 made?
I don't even want to look at it. But I, from the notes I read on this movie, what's his name? Andrew Kevin Walker had a lot to do with the rewrites and stuff. Andrew Kevin Walker is the guy who wrote Seven. And rewrites most of his stuff, for the most part. Like, he's had a crack at, like, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, all the Fincher movies.
That's not who also did Scream, right?
No. You're thinking that's of another Kevin, three-name Kevin guy. Walker. That's Kevin Walker.
Kevin Walker, yeah. Not Andrew Kevin Walker.
No. Yeah. Andrew Kevin Walker, if you could find it online, he wrote a Batman script. And I think he wrote a Year One script, if I'm not mistaken. Hmm. But it's actually really, really well done. It would have definitely been an R version of it. So if you can download it, check it out. But anyway, that is my number three. Adam?
My number three, 1994, In the Mouth of Madness.
Ooh.
Some John Carpenter.
I forgot about In the Mouth of Madness.
John Carpenter doing some crazy Lovecraftian horror.
Yeah.
Cannot beat that, and you cannot get much more mindfucky than that.
Weren't they going to remake this movie?
Were they?
Isn't Del Toro, hasn't he been trying to remake this movie?
Oh, no, he was trying to make At the Mountains of Madness, which is an
actual Lovecraft.
Yeah, that's an actual Lovecraft. This is just John Carpenter riffing on Lovecraft.
Okay.
At the Mountains of Madness is his most famous story.
Yeah.
I mean, ish. Which I would love to see. I would love to see Guillermo del Toro do Mountains of Madness. That'd be amazing. This, however, is a whole other head trip of mind fuckery.
It's so gross. Such a gross mind trip. I just remember seeing this like right when I was really when I kind of became aware of John Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was when I was into just like having seen all of his stuff and everything. And then a John Carpenter movie comes out in the theater. And I just remember like, it feels so much more horrific than anything he did before. Like even The Thing, which has some pretty horrific stuff in it, especially like...
Which is very much like At the Mountains of Madness.
Yeah, that's true. But like I remember the hotel owner with her husband in the basement.
Yeah.
Like that just creeped me the fuck out.
Well, give us a synopsis. I don't think I've seen this.
No,
haven't seen The Mouth of Madness?
No, I think I've seen
this. So good. Okay, so Sam Neill plays an insurance investigator who's sent to go find an author who's gone missing, who is supposed to turn in his last novel.
Who's basically Lovecraft.
Yeah, he's like a Lovecraft character. And he's gone missing, and so they're like, we need you to go find him and get his book because we gave him, like, a crazy advance. And the guy who sends him
this plot wouldn't work today.
The guy who sends him is Charlton Heston. And then as things sort of progress, Sam Neill begins to, like, find out slash be told slash believe that he is the main character of the author's latest book.
Oh.
And it's just this crazy mindfuck from there on. And, like, there's weird monsters, and, like, the town folks are crazy, and the town may or may not actually be a place. And it's like, oh, this place doesn't exist, and, oh, the woman who I sent you there with isn't a real person. I can't even begin to explain how much of a mindfuck this movie is. And it's so good, and it's got such crazy, like, such crazy monster effects, and just people going insane. And Sam Neill does insane really, really well.
Yeah.
Like, he comes back, and he's kind of been committed, and, yeah, it's...
The scene where he's trying to leave the village.
Yeah.
And, like, it just keeps putting him back.
Yeah, he keeps going in circles.
Oh, God.
There's a scene where he's watching the movie of the book, but it's him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so good. It's such a crazy movie, and, like, just people... You don't even need the creature stuff to be crazy and mind-fucky and scary. Just the stuff with the people going insane for no reason is awesome. Like, it's a truly, like, firing on all cylinders scary movie for all the different ways that it's trying to scare you.
Just super unsettling.
And what's and then the author is Jürgen Prochnow.
Yeah.
Who is, like, he doesn't even have to do anything to be creepy. And then you've got, like, he's like, I don't know, he's just this crazy Lovecraftian author. And he's like the god of this world that he's created. It's such a head trip. Such a head trip.
I gotta check it out.
It's really good.
You know who looks really weird and always trips me out? Udo Kier.
He does. He should be in this movie, I feel like.
Yeah, are you sure he's not?
I'm not entirely sure that he's not.
Udukir always kind of creeps me out. Just like, if for those who don't know, he's a guy, I guess he's in Blade. You probably know
people
know
he's in Blade.
He's the guy the guy that Steven Dorff takes outside and burns, basically. He makes him hang out outside and to see the sunrise and stuff. Kills him.
He's in a John Carpenter thing. There was a Masters of Horror series, and John Carpenter did one called Cigarette Burns that was about like a supposed rare film that if you saw it, you went insane.
Is that Norman Reedus in that one?
Yes. Yeah, okay. It is Norman Reedus. I think it's still on Netflix, and it was pretty good. It's like an hour because
it's
it was
one
a TV
of
show.
The bearable Masters of Horror.
Yeah, I didn't watch any of the others, so I don't know.
A lot of them are really bad.
But it was good.
You had a lot of great people making them, right?
Yeah, that was what was depressing. Is like you have all these great horror directors making these really not great shorts or TV movie length things. I really liked Cigarette Burns. I really liked Jennifer.
And so, who did that one?
I want to say that was Argento, but I might be wrong. But that was one with Steven Weber.
Okay.
Oh.
But it's good. I think they're still on Netflix.
Are they?
Yeah, on Instant.
I gotta check them out. Check them out. At least this one.
Oh, you gotta watch In the Mouth of Madness first. I'm surprised you haven't seen it.
Yeah,
In the Mouth of Madness.
You gotta check that out.
It's you will love it.
I mean, Sam Neill.
What year was this?
Sam Neill's so
94.
Good.
Okay.
Yeah, this is right after Jurassic Park.
All right. Well, that's your number three?
Yes.
Okay. Brandon, what is your number two?
Number two, I think I'm changing it to what I did have.
Uh-oh.
Because I really loved this movie. I still haven't seen it again, but it would be, I don't know, 2009? Time Crimes. Nacho Vigalondo's Time Crimes.
I think we talked about this, how I was supposed to watch this before.
You haven't seen it?
No, I haven't seen this.
It's really...
It's the movie from Spain, right? The movie from Spain.
Yes. Yeah,
I just didn't get around to it. I didn't get around to it.
It's the best, In the same way you loved Eyes Wide Shut, how we're just following this character's journey,
mm-hmm.
like Time Crimes feels that way for a horrific time travel story. But it has this. But the way the time travel works is like this kind of nesting doll kind of effect for the story. It's kind of hard to explain.
Well, one of my favorite things about the way they do time travel is it's not. Like, everyone isn't exactly in the right spot at the exact right time. Like,
yeah.
Like, because in some ways, like, oh, well, this is what happened next, so I'm just going to go there. But you can't just do that.
Right. So you have to do something else to get that to happen.
Yeah.
And then what you did to get that to happen becomes the thing that happens. And then it just keeps going on like that. And it's really good. It's really well made.
Really?
Yeah. And it gets right into it, too.
It's really quick.
Like, it starts off with it. I'll say this.
Mm-hmm.
Everything sets off from a guy looking at his house at a naked girl in the forest.
Mm-hmm.
Time travel terror ensues.
Yeah. Okay. And it's so good.
It's really good.
Does it have a twist ending or is it just the mindfuck?
No, not really. It's just the way that... I mean, the mindfuck is...
When you're realizing what everything is. It's not a twist ending because it's a time travel thing. So the ending is the beginning?
Yeah.
It's like unraveling everything. It's like seeing the layers, like realizing... It's a twist ending when you realize like what just happened. It's like, what the fuck?
And you only realize what happens as the main character, as Hector, realizes what's happening. Like, so you're following him all the time. So it's not a twist. You're following him in the story. That's what I hate about every other twist ending, because most of the time twist endings are totally separate from anything that's actually happening in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just for you,
the
viewer, because you have information that the other person doesn't. But this is, you're with him 100% of the way. So when you see something like folding into place, you know, as it goes on, it's him as well. And it's really good. So there's no twist. It just all kind of comes full circle.
Yeah.
But the way it does it is super impressive.
Yeah. It's very, very well crafted.
Really?
It's a lot of fun. It has some nice scares.
Yeah.
And it wasn't one of those movies where I'm like, oh, I know what's going to happen. I was like, oh, I'm interested and I want to see where this goes.
It's iconic too. The thing, there's a part where he has to wrap his head in a bandage, or someone has to wrap their head in a bandage, and am I giving something away?
A little bit.
Yeah, okay.
We should delete that.
Well, he's on. There's a character on the cover that's whose head is wrapped in a bandage. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's very iconic. It's a very cool design.
Okay.
But that just speaks to the rest of the movie, how, like, super well-focused it is.
And it's in Spanish?
Yes.
Nice. Taught to read subtitles. All right.
Spain Spanish.
That's fine. I understand it. So it's called Time Crimes?
Time Crimes.
Came out, do you know what year?
I don't.
It was fairly new, right?
I guess 2009.
Was it that long ago? Come on.
I would say 2008, 2009, but I don't know.
That sounds right.
I'll go, it's my number two then?
2007.
Oh, okay.
Oh. My number two is from 2010, and it's called I Saw the Devil.
That is a different kind of mindfuck.
Yeah, yeah. It's
because you just it's a mindfuck in the sense where it's like, I can't believe he's fucking doing this. Like the cop is letting it, like the way the protagonist is acting is like, I cannot believe that he's doing this.
Yeah, yeah. It's directed by Kim Yi Wong Won. I'm sure we butcher that name. But it is the guy. One of the stars of the movie is the guy from Old Boy. He plays the villain in this movie. And basically it starts off, I'll give you the non-spoilery version of it. This guy's fiance calls her boyfriend, husband, fiance. And she says, hey, her tire blew out. She's waiting by the side of the road. And then this guy in the truck stops. And then she's kidnapped. And it turns out that girl's fiance was, he's a like a cop. He's a detective. And it's just like this cat and mouse game with this serial killer and this cop. And it goes everywhere, and it has some of the best action scenes I've seen for would you call this a horror thriller, Adam?
Yes,
for a horror thriller, it's got some crazy action with like a shotgun and like,
yeah,
I was blown away. Like this is the way we got to be doing our action, because everything is clear. I always talk about this. I love Captain America, but for the exception of one scene where something's not very clear, there's a fight where I don't know the geography of where he's at, so it's a little confusing.
You can say
we'll talk about it later. No, I don't want to spoil it. I'll talk about it later. And it's on the boat. It's one of the fights in the boat.
Okay.
And I like how clear everything is in this movie. Like, mm-hmm. Meaning there's like a guy running. There's a guy with a shotgun, and like
it's not like
shit's blowing up.
Chaos cinema.
Yes, it's not like Michael Bay where you're like, I don't know where the fuck I'm at. I know. There's transport, whatever they're called, Transformers. They're kicking each other's ass, but I don't know where they're at. I don't know who's winning. And I like action that's very clear and like
mm-hmm. It's a very precise film.
Yeah, and you know who's really good at this? I keep talking about this. James Cameron is amazing at this. Like if you watch Terminator 2, he actually is very specific about even going to slow motion right before the action starts. There's always a little bit of slow motion, so you can see where everything's at, where everybody's at. And it's very clear, and then the action starts, and it's fast. And this guy doesn't have that slow motion, but he's very clear of where you're at, where the actors are, you know, where they're moving. Everything's really clear, and I love this movie. It's just, I like it not for the fact that, oh man, I mean, it makes me feel horrible. At the end,
like, as much as I enjoy it, it's a really unsettling experience. I feel like this is a pretty early movie that Savannah and I saw when we had first started dating.
Wow.
In theaters.
And
yeah, let's go see this really fucked up Korean movie.
By the way, it's 2.5 hours.
Yeah, it's 2.5 hours long.
And it's definitely like just a heavy, heavy movie, but really well done. It's
even when it surprises you, he's very precise with his surprises. It's like he can surprise you, but you're not confused by it.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, that makes sense, you know? Like, and yeah, there's some gruesome scenes, but the story warrants that. Where sometimes you watch a movie like, you know, your typical like torture porn film, and you're like, this story is not good. You're doing this torture porn type of horror to shock me, and it's not shocking me. It's shocking me that you would put this on here without a great story. Like, it's just for the sake of doing it. Where this movie is like, the story's top notch, the horror's top notch, the gruesomeness is top notch because it's emotionally giving you, you know, it's giving you an emotion.
Yeah.
Where torture porn movies don't usually. You're like, I'm just, it's squeamish.
Yeah, it's just,
squeamish,
it's not just trying to gross you out. It's,
there's a point to, the madness. Yeah. And I love this, how it took me everywhere. Like, just, I was like excited when he was getting close and then like really sad and like, ugh.
You're with him.
I'm with the guy, man. The character. Yeah, yeah. I think the main actor, the guy playing the detective, is the guy from The Good, the Bad, and the Weird, I think. Yeah, right.
Byung-Hun Lee.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's really good in this. All the actors are great. A lot of great films coming out of Korea.
Oh, shit. He's Storm Shadow.
Really?
Yeah. In the G.I. Joe, in the new G.I. Joe
no
movies, he's
way.
Storm Shadow.
That's so funny. It doesn't translate very well when he's doing an American film. Well, it's like John Woo. He was amazing when he was overseas, but then we brought him over here and then we ruined him.
He was amazing when he came here. What did he do when he came
here?
Hard
Target.
Face Off.
Hard Target.
Broken Arrow. All of them amazing.
Paycheck. Mission Impossible
2. Windtalkers.
Windtalkers.
What was the one with Mira Sorvino and Chow Yun-Fat?
The Replacement Killers.
That actually isn't him.
Is that not John Woo?
No. I think that's Antoine Fuqua.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. But yeah, so that is
well, that's what we
two.
Did to Chow Yun-Fat.
What's worse? Yeah. What we did to John Woo or Chow Yun-Fat? We put Chow Yun-Fat in Dragon Ball Z, the movie.
Poor guy.
All right, so that is my number two. I Saw the Devil. Check it out. It's definitely going to take you some places you don't want to go, but but it's
so well made, though.
It's so well made. That's why it's so good, because it's so well made. If this movie was in the hands of somebody who wasn't a great director, filmmaker, storyteller, it would have just been like gruesome for the sake of being gruesome and not good at all. But it's like written well, it's paced well. The tension in the camera's movements is amazing. It's just top notch. Check it out. I Saw the Devil. It's gonna fuck you up mentally. Yeah.
Yeah. You might
not existentially. But just horror.
It might fuck with you existentially.
It might. Yeah.
All right, well, that plays very well into my number two, which is Old Boy.
Oh, well, that plays nicely into my number one, which is Old Boy. Is this 2013's Old Boy?
No, it's 2003's Old Boy. I still haven't seen 2013.
No, me neither.
Okay, so give people a synopsis without giving spoilers. Just give the first bit of the movie.
Drunk asshole gets kidnapped and
imprisoned for 20 years.
And released, and we don't know why, neither does he.
Yeah, he has to figure out why.
But the reason why is the most explicit versions of the word mind and the word fuck that could happen.
Yeah, it's this movie.
It's brutal.
So good.
I remember seeing this. I saw this in theaters,
and
thinking like 3/4 of the way, like thinking, nah. Well, because
like it's telegraphed a little,
yeah. And then you're like, no.
Because once you first hear like the story,
yeah,
at the school,
yeah,
like you kind of like, no,
but no. Yeah, it's hard to explain what we're trying to explain without giving. Like major spoilers away, but it definitely, I will say, it's a great, this goes hand in hand with the twist endings episode, but in its own way, it's not even about the twist ending, it's the whole movie.
Well, I don't think it's not even that it's a twist, like the whole point of the movie is to get to this ending, like that information. It's not like, oh hey, we're gonna almost get you there and then, oh just kidding, that's not what really happened.
Yeah,
it's like the entire movie is driving forward to this information the entire time.
And this is another movie that is just well directed.
Very well directed.
Yeah,
a little bit more fun than I Saw the Devil. because it doesn't get super fucked, like super, super fucked up until the very end.
Yeah. But see, the type of fucked up that I saw the devil is, I could handle. Do you mean? But the type of fucked up that this movie is just weird, man. And it's like,
really? Did you feel worse after Old Boy than you did after I Saw the Devil? Because after I Saw the Devil, I felt really, like, as much as I enjoyed it, I was like, I just feel drained. Like Old Boy, I was just like, that was fucked up. Like, I wasn't as emotionally drained by I Saw the or by Old Boy as I was by I Saw the Devil.
See, Old Boy was like, yeah, this is fucked up. I'm exhausted. But I think with I Saw the Devil, for me also, it was like, fuck, like, this guy is amazing. This director, like, it was like, you took me places and I'm emotionally drained, but man, I want to know more about you. Like, the first thing I did was IMDb that guy and be like, what? I want to know more about this guy. You know, like, what's he going to do next?
Because the ending to Old Boy is just a gut punch.
Yeah.
Like, nothing, like, sets you up for the ending.
Yeah.
It just comes because it's the end of the story.
Yeah.
But, like, nothing before it is, like, fucked up, you know?
No.
So to speak.
Except the octopus.
Yeah. So that actor's Buddhist.
Yeah.
And he had to do the octopus thing a few times. And before he would do it each time, he would, you know, say a prayer for the octopus. Because, you know, you're strict vegan.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then he still did it.
Really?
Yeah, he had to do it like 3 or 4 times.
Ugh.
Oh, it's part where he eats an octopus. I want to eat something.
A live octopus.
I want to eat something alive.
Ugh.
Is that in the remake?
I don't know. We'll find out.
I don't know. I feel like they would wimp out on that. Like, Josh Brolin is not doing it, and Spike Lee's like, nah, you don't need to eat the octopus.
We'll see.
But I was always wondering what the American equivalent of the octopus would be. Like a lamb or something?
Like a live lamb?
Like a snake? Eating a snake? Like, what would be the American equivalent of eating a live octopus? Because
we don't serve anything alive.
No, I know, and that is a thing that you can get in at least more places. It's not, like, prevalent, but in Japan there are...
Like a bug?
Yeah, it would have to be, like, a handful of bugs, like, just, like, shoving them in your mouth like M&Ms or something. An octopus is huge, is big.
Well, and you can see, like, suctioning to his face while he's eating it.
Oh, yeah, he has to keep pulling the tentacles away and, like, spinning him around to go into his mouth, yeah. And that can, like, they can suck on to, like, your throat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to bite into its brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But octopus is delicious.
Cephalopods.
I wouldn't eat it alive, but octopus is delicious.
Yeah, so this movie is definitely a mind.
Has one of the best action sequences that people have been ripping off for years. Yeah, the hammer fight.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Done verbatim in the remake.
Really?
Yeah. They released that clip. I remember seeing it. And it's...
Shot for shot?
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly the same.
Wow. It's a really well done scene, though.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's the most video gamey thing that I've seen that works.
Yeah.
That isn't like, oh, here's where we're trying to be like a video game.
And it's one take.
Because I don't think they were trying to be like a video game. Yeah. But...
And it's not like first person-y.
Right.
That's what fucking annoys me. Oh, you like video games? We're going to make this whole shootout first person. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
And it's just, just watching someone take revenge like that is so sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think I said it because this was on.
Because we don't want to say things. There's a lot of silence in this pick.
I know.
Because it's like you're thinking of things and you're like, I can't talk about that. I can't talk about that.
But I think we may mention this I think this was on my list for the foreign language one. But I love how he's a complete asshole at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like
he's
this drunk prick yelling at cops in the police station.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like crying.
And we have to get sympathy for him like right away.
Yeah. Yeah. Good pick. And again, you're the main actor in Old Boy is the villain in I Saw the Devil. Really great actor.
Yes.
I just saw him in a trailer for an American film. Oh, he's in Lucy, the new Luc Besson film.
God, that looks bananas.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for
you
that.
You mean Luc Besson's Limitless?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I hate that we're still doing that, but... It looks like a good excuse for some crazy action.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole 10% of your brain thing.
It's...
When it turns the world into her iPad?
Well, yeah. Like,
I'm excited.
She can change her hair color at will.
Yeah. She can freeze time.
Yeah. Or time travel.
And freeze time, rewind it.
Yeah.
Like Superman when he flew around the Earth.
Yeah, except she does it like a DJ though. She can just like remix it.
Yeah.
Well, it's like an iPod.
Because she only uses, and I love how in the movie it's like, so she keeps starting to use more and more of her brain, so her skills increase.
Yeah.
So like, what's the ultimate thing? When she gets to 100%, what can she do? Well, I guess learn the secrets of the universe. That's what it says in the trailer.
Yeah.
The humanity's not ready.
Yeah. I'm curious to see this movie.
I'm excited. It looks great. Yeah, yeah. It looks super colorful.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I don't know that I would say it looks great, though. It looks crazy.
It looks better than Limitless.
And yeah, but that's not saying much.
Better than Luc Besson's last few things.
The Family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. What is your number? What's your recap in your number one?
That was my number one, Old Boy. Well,
give us your whole recap.
Whole recap.
Yeah. We want to know.
They just heard it.
All right.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind,
yeah.
2001, The Game, Time Crimes, and Old Boy.
Okay. My recap and then my number one. Number five was Being John Malkovich. Four, Eyes Wide Shut. Three, The Game. Two is I Saw the Devil. And my number one, just because I saw it when I was really, really young. And even seeing as this movie is an adult, it's still a mind trip for me. 1984's Repo Man.
I've never seen Repo Man.
Really?
Yeah.
I love Repo Man. And
I know, I'm bummed I haven't seen it.
And just because it's so wacky and like just out there, I don't want to give too much away. I'll give you like the generic synopsis. A young punk, Otto, who's played by Emilio Estevez, becomes a repo man after helping to steal a car and stumbles into a world of wackiness as a result. Basically, he repos a car. There's a suitcase in it, and all these people want the suitcase, including people who may or may not be aliens. It's just a wacky-ass movie. I think, for me, I'm a huge, 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 huge Harry Dean Stanton fan. And he's in this, and I think that's what kind of... I think this might have been the first Harry Dean Stanton movie I saw. If not, maybe 16... What year was 16 Candles? Because he plays her dad in that, no?
Yeah, I think 16 Candles is like 84.
You mean Pretty in Pink?
Pretty in Pink, yeah, I'm sorry. Pretty in Pink. It's about the same year, right? 84?
This something is 84. Like that, 84, 86.
Yeah. But it's just young Emilio Estevez, just cocky, kind of a punk... punker, and him getting involved. It's like, it's very much like, just like North by Northwest is just this guy stumbling on to this adventure. I feel like this is like the punk rock version of that, of this guy just getting involved in this thing where it, the world around him starts getting crazier and crazier and crazier. And it's an adventure, but in craziness.
I miss Emilio Estevez too.
I do too.
Yeah. He was really good.
Yeah, he was really good. Even in when he was making like pop films like Young Guns and stuff, mm-hmm. I still enjoyed him in that.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of charisma.
Especially.
Yeah, yeah.
Men at Work is really good.
He directed that one.
Yeah.
Oh, did he direct that
yeah.
one?
Yeah, yeah.
I love that movie.
I thought he just did the Robert Kennedy one.
Bobby?
Yeah.
No, he did that. He did Rated X.
That Kennedy. What's the name of the movie?
He did Rated X. He did... something else. I think he's just more about the directing now. But yeah, I love Emilio.
Yeah, he's really good. But that's all I'll say. Just check it out.
Stakeout.
Stakeout.
Another stakeout.
Another stakeout. Yeah. Yeah. No, not another stakeout.
I wish Emilio would
starring Rosie O'Donnell.
I wish Emilio Estevez would have been in A Night at the Roxbury. That would just would have made the movie.
That would have
kind of watchable.
Deleted scene.
Is that a joke from the sketch Night at the Roxbury that I'm not remembering?
It's in the movie. They talk like their like big story that they keep telling is how they were waiting in line
to use the public phone,
to use the payphone, and it was Emilio Estevez, and he tipped his hat like this.
Ugh, ugh.
They got Richard Grieco.
They did. They did. Dude.
Looks could kill.
It's directed by
Alex Cox.
Alex Cox. He's an interesting guy, interesting director.
A weird dude.
Yeah, bit of a weird dude. Yeah, that's not. Yeah, he definitely is an interesting director, and I dig this a lot. I don't want to give anything away because I think it's a movie. It's a weird 80s classic.
I do love Repo Man, but I never really thought of it as a mind fuck.
Really?
Yeah, it's just weird.
For me, I have to put it on this list because I saw it when I was a kid, and to me that this was... Imagine like a 8-year-old me.
Yeah, no, I remember seeing it really young.
And just being like, whoa, what's going on, man? What's going on here?
Yeah, because it's not specifically about screwing with someone's head.
Yeah, yeah, like I was never like puzzled. I was like, that's just weird. It's like a Wilder Napalm kind of like, that's just weird.
Yeah, well, I would say the same thing about like Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah.
Like it's not really about fucking with anyone's head necessarily. But
yeah, but the Eyes Wide Shut, you're just like, what the fuck's going on?
Right,
in a different kind of way. I don't know. I'm not saying I veto this. It doesn't. It can't be on this list.
Well,
I'm just. It was just. It's a different kind of weird. But yeah, no. Yeah. That's. I love it. It's an awesome pick.
Because it reminded me of. Have you guys seen Real Men? 80s classic.
Real Men.
No one calls it an 80s classic, but it's but it's really good, and people should.
I feel like you're making it up.
No, I'm not. With John Ritter and James Belushi.
No.
John Ritter plays this kind of milquetoast, you know, guy, and James Belushi shows up in his life saying he's from the CIA. No. And he takes him on like as his partner as they go on this quest to deliver a glass of water to aliens that are going to come meet. It's really good, and like they run into like KGB spies and agents. Yeah, and it's actually really funny.
Let's go watch that right now.
I will say it's the funniest thing I've ever seen James Belushi in, and he's great in the movie. This is right at that perfect moment where he has
red heat.
Taking care of business.
This is from the same writer as Just One of the Guys, The Golden Child.
Wait, seriously?
Real Men is?
Yeah. Same writer, just one writer.
Wait, Real Men or Repo?
Real Men.
Okay.
Is he Real Men writer wrote The Golden Child, Just One of the Guys, Species, Virus.
Species was good.
Yeah. And Virus.
I didn't see Virus.
But I remember Virus.
But Real Men is really good. Trust me. Everyone out there, watch Real Men. It used to be on cable all the time. That's how I saw it. But James Belushi has some legitimately great laughs, and John Ritter's great.
Yeah. Yeah, check it out. But yeah, Repo Man's there for the fact that it really was a trip for me as a kid.
Well, that's a weird movie as a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I remember just like...
Well, it's like juggling all these different tones,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, I wanted to be Repo Man after that. I'm like, you get to steal cars? That's awesome. But yeah, so check that out if you get a chance. And what is your number one, Adam? Your recap number one.
Okay, so my number five was Naked Lunch. Number four was The Vanishing, which I also realized was on my twist endings list. Number three, In the Mouth of Madness. Number two, Old Boy. And my number one, The Machinist, 2004.
Oh, yes.
This movie came out like the week I moved to Long Beach, right? And it was playing at the Art Theater right down the street from my apartment. Saw it like twice in as many days.
I wonder if I put this on a different list. I think a twist ending list, I think I put it on.
We might have both had it on. Yeah. It was an honorable mention on that.
Yeah.
But it's such a head trip.
Yes, it is.
Just, I mean, beyond Christian Bale getting down to 92 pounds or however. Yeah. Skinny Auschwitz skinny he gets, just the this it's a puzzle. That's why that was my other like kind of basis for this list, where it feels a movie that feels kind of like a puzzle where it's asking you to solve it.
Yeah, yeah.
And this movie, I mean, from the hangman slowly, the game of hangman that appears on his kitchen refrigerator, he's trying to figure out what's going on. It just kind of had me.
And give a synopsis for people who haven't seen it. Just okay, so non-spoilery.
He is an industrial worker, thus the machinist,
yeah,
who claims that he has not slept in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone thinks he looks like death, and like they keep talking about how he's like wasting away. And it all comes into play in a really, really interesting way. And it's one of those movies where you watch it and you go back and rewatch it again, like, oh shit, like they were telling me, like they were hinting at this so early on, and it's just, it's so good. And he starts seeing this weird guy at work, and he's imagining things, and a game of hangman starts like just on a post-it appears in his kitchen. He doesn't know how it gets there, and it's just him trying to figure out what's going on. And like he's convinced, like he's got a lot of paranoia, and he's convinced that there's a conspiracy against him at work. And it's really, really interesting. It was written by Scott Kosar, who also wrote... Wait, did he write Session 9 also? I know it's the same director. It's Brad Anderson. I don't remember if Scott Kosar also wrote that movie, too.
Yeah.
Oh, he wrote The Crazies.
The remake?
Yeah, the remake.
Oh, okay.
He did a bunch of remakes and this. He did The Crazies, The Amityville Horror, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
This is really good, though.
But Brad Anderson, who also did Session 9, which is also really good, which is also kind of a mindfuck.
Yeah.
And this, the way they got this movie made was they shot it in Spain.
Really?
Yeah, that's how, like, they had a bunch of Spanish investors who, like, we wanted to make this movie. Like, that was the only way they could get the money, so they made it in Spain.
How did they make it and make it look
like... They had to find the shittiest parts of Spain to make it look like America.
Really?
Yeah, like, really shitty industrial areas. It's a really interesting DVD. It's, like, they got a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff where they talk about that.
Oh, wow. I gotta check this DVD out, the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah.
I remember just loving the look of it, the tone. It just makes you feel...
It's got a great look. The soundtrack or the score is amazing. Yeah. Just really creepy, a lot of theremin kind of stuff. Christian Bale is awesome. Jason Lee.
Christian Bale looks like he's just bones. That's how skinny he is. It's funny because he went from this to Batman Begins.
Yeah.
So, which is a big, big change.
Yes. Drastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he looks like death.
Yeah. He literally looks like he's dying. And Michael Ironside, I remember him.
Oh, yes, Michael Ironside is in it. He was one of the other guys who works in the factory shop, with him. Yeah.
A really great cast. It just makes you feel, makes me feel like a little gross when I see this. Just because, I think just even the look of the film, it's like really mucky.
Yeah, it's very dingy and grimy and it would go well with Seven.
Yeah, yeah. Good double feature. But you wouldn't feel good afterwards.
You would not feel good afterwards.
It's like, you'd have to like, you've had to have had the best day of your life in order to see this double feature.
Or you'd have to make it like a triple feature with something, or just like watch a sitcom right after, or like in between, like watch one of them and then a sitcom and then one of them and then another sitcom.
Yeah.
And a really funny episode of Parks and Rec or something.
Yeah, this movie's really, it's a downer too. It's like, just like.
It's so good though.
Yeah, it's really good.
So good. Yeah, very low budget, made in Spain. I just love the soundtrack. I can sit and just creep myself out with the soundtrack.
Well, I think that's our list. Does anybody have honorable mentions they want to throw out there?
I only mention because this should have been my number one.
Yeah.
But because when I first saw it, it really creeped me out. And when I first saw it, I was really young.
Yeah.
And I hadn't yet watched movies like this, but Eraserhead.
Oh yeah, that should be very high
as far as like,
that's like the mindfuckiest mindfuck,
but like just fucking my mind.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like there's nothing really that's fucking. Well, there is some things that fuck with his head in the movie, but it's all just, it's basically an exercise in making people uncomfortable, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that's, I just remember that fucking the baby.
Yeah,
like the chicken baby. Yep. Or
the weird mutant aborted.
Yes, the. Oh.
Chicken fetus.
Just like making that noise.
Yeah.
Oh, so like horrifying.
Yeah.
Horrifying.
Yeah. I would put Requiem for a Dream on here too. It's kind of.
It is a mind fuck, but not a fun mind fuck at all.
No, no. Well, some of these picks that we had today aren't fun.
They're not fun.
I don't think Eraserhead's fun.
Yeah,
but I would watch Eraserhead again.
Mulholland Drive should be on the list as well.
I would watch that again.
Yeah. Memento.
Basically, anything by David Lynch.
Yeah, would be on this list.
Could be on this list.
That isn't Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah, Memento is also pretty mind.
That is a mind fuck. That's a whole other.
I'm surprised no one said Memento. Yeah. Actually,
I think Memento will save. Yeah, I think there's a really great topic in
about like movies, the sequence.
Yeah, movies that aren't in sequence, you know. What is it called? There's a specific name for that. I'm drawing a blank here.
Non-chronological?
Yeah, non-chronological films. I think that's another topic unto itself that we might want to cover. But I don't know what you guys feel about this, but Arlington Road, I would put on here. It's pretty mind trippy. Like,
I mean,
no.
I can't, like, that wasn't really surprising.
Really?
But like in the way that any like paranoid thriller is,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Maybe Silence of the Lambs.
I mean, he's fucking with her mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not until Bring on the Dancing Horses.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else you have on there?
I like Moon.
Yeah,
Moon is a nice trip.
Source Code as well.
Source Code, Brazil. Yeah, was high up on my list. Yeah.
Brazil is pretty trippy, man.
Yeah,
yeah.
I had The Tenant by Polanski.
The okay. Yeah, no, totally.
And John Dies at the End.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen that either.
It's really good, but it's more like it's more Repo Man weird.
Really?
Than a mind fuck. It's like a supernatural Repo Man.
What do you guys think of Boba Hotep? I love that movie.
I do like Boba Hotep.
Yeah, Boba Hotep's great.
Would that be considered a mind trip?
I don't. I mean, I think that's just weird.
Yeah.
It's eccentric. That's an eccentric. We do an eccentric movies. Boba Hotep all the way.
I'm surprised you didn't say Prestige. I'm pointing at Ricardo.
Maybe, I don't know.
He's got a big Christopher Nolan heart on.
I do have a big Christopher Nolan heart on. But I'm trying not to. I'm trying to be fair about everything. See, I feel like it's funny.
But it's not really a mind fuck. That's more of a twist ending.
It's really well made, though.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we'll end it there. I was just thinking about Prestige and how awesome. I love that movie. The Prestige and The Illusionist came out like the same like year.
I think Illusionist came out afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. But they were both the magician films.
Yeah.
But Christopher Nolan is definitely better and darker, and I love Hugh Jackman in it.
And if you haven't read the book, I highly recommend the book, The Prestige.
But it's different from the movie.
Kinda. I mean, not all the broad strokes are there.
Is there an audiobook that's read by Michael Caine? Because
if only.
But it's not called The Prestige, I think.
Yeah.
Is it? Then it's because he made the name up. The whole turn and all the things, they made it up for the movie.
No. It's called The Prestige.
Oh.
Yeah, I remember.
I don't know.
I feel like you've got the book if you want it.
Yeah, maybe they just made up the thing to equal The Prestige. I think, but maybe you're right. I'm confused. Maybe.
I mean, maybe they don't say that thing.
Yeah, the turn and all that stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't open with Michael Caine giving a speech. If that's what you mean.
All right, just wondering. Michael Caine. It's not the book's not about Michael Caine.
Well, the thing to be fair, I don't think a lot of magicians ever called anything The Prestige.
Yeah.
The Aristocrats.
No one.
That's a mindfuck of a
movie. I had never heard that joke until the movie. That's all I'll say about The Aristocrats.
Me neither. Have you ever tried to tell that joke?
No.
Have you?
No, I'm not a stand-up.
It wouldn't be good. Yeah, I'm not a comedian.
Yeah. I wonder.
It would just be me saying sick shit, and then whoever I was telling it to would look at me weird. And
you know what? I would tell that joke now. I'm just gonna say things that happened and I saw the devil.
Yeah. Or have you ever done Fuck You Clown, that story? Fuck
yes.
Look that up, Fuck You Clown. All right. That is it. Follow our other podcast. We have the List Music Podcast. We have what's our other podcast that I just started with Michelle? Previously on podcast, I have my girlfriend now talking about TV shows. She talks about everything, The Walking Dead, How I Met Your Mother. She talks about the finales to those two. And then the Game of Thrones. She talked about the Game of Thrones season premiere, which we just had a couple days ago. And then check out my friend Morris's podcast, See Here, or Here See. No, yeah. One of those two. I'll put the link up on this episode. And basically, he talks about movies that have to do about music. It's music film related. Check that out. And then our last little thing that you should check out is a really cool podcast. They basically talk about comic books and stuff like that. But it's a really cool podcast. It's called Geeks with Wives podcast. So check that out. geekswithwives.com. And I haven't bought a comic book in a while, and they kind of talk about the comic books they're reading, new stuff and stuff, and they kind of describe what it is, and it kind of really definitely got me into like wanting to go to the comic book store on Wednesday, so I might do that and get myself some Moon Knight. All right, until next time. And Adam, where can people, we should mention our Twitter names. Where can people find you on Twitter?
I'm @AnAdamScott, @AN_AdamScott.
@BLBennett.
And I'm at Ricardo, U-L-T-R-E-R-A-S. And the podcast is at The Film Podcast. You can find us online at thefilmpodcast.com. And what else? Anything else you want to plug before we leave? No? Forget you then. All right. Until next time, have a good week.